Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About.
So Let's Get Busy podcast is supported by listeners like you. Help support the show by logging on to lgbpodcast.blogspot.com and clicking donate.
Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 176 with Kate Messner, the author most recently of Tree of Wonder, The Many Marvelous Lives of a Rainforest Tree, which is published by Chronicle Books and illustrated by Simona Mulazani. When Kate traveled to the rainforests of Costa Rica, she encountered the almendro tree, which, in Kate's words, make you feel small the way that looking at the stars does. I don't think I have to say any more than that. Here is episode number 176 of the podcast with Kate Messner. Let's get busy. Welcome back to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Kate Messner. I'm excited to talk to you again.
Oh my gosh, so excited to be here again, Matthew.
Kate, I love you, and you're back. This is so great, with a new book, too. That's wonderful. I love Tree of Wonder. I'm so glad that I had a chance to get to preview it, to get to read it ahead of time, and get to talk to you tonight to celebrate.
I am so excited for this book to come out. It's been a while in the making. It took a while to research and write. It took a while to find just the right illustrator. And Simona Mulazani has done just an incredibly beautiful job, I think. So I'm really, really thrilled that pretty soon it will not just be our book anymore, but everybody's book.
That's right. Oh, I love that phrase, that it'll be everybody's book. You said it took a while to come to publication. How did the process start?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I was in Costa Rica researching a totally different book when this story kind of popped into my head and then into my writer's notebook. I have a mystery series with Scholastic, the Silver Jaguar Society Mysteries, about three kids whose families are part of a secret society to protect the world's artifacts. And so they go all over the world to have adventures and try to recover artifacts that have been stolen and save artifacts that are threatened. Mm. And in the second book in that series, Hide and Seek, the kids go to try and recover an ancient Silver Jaguar Society artifact in Costa Rica. So they're actually in the middle of the rainforest. And when I was working on this book, researching it, I really wanted to have the opportunity to experience the kinds of things the kids would experience if they were, you know, trying to solve a mystery in the jungle. Now, add to that, I studied rainforest when we studied ecosystems in third grade, and I was obsessed with the rainforest. So since third grade, I've had this rainforest fantasy going, and I'm like, aha, here's a chance to go.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, anyway, I did. I finally got to go to a tropical rainforest, and we spent a week. My family went with me, and we spent the better part of a week staying in an eco lodge called Selva Verde Lodge, which is basically the buildings were up on stilts, so the river didn't wash them away when it flooded. And we were there during the rainy season, so it poured every afternoon. But most of the time I was there, I spent out hiking in the jungle because, you know, if you've read any of those mysteries, you know, there are chase scenes and the kids are off having adventures. And I really wanted to encounter the kinds of things they would encounter. And you can read about that. You can Google what lives in a rainforest. But it's so different being there and feeling the rain dripping off the trees and the heaviness of that humid August air in the tropics.
Yeah.
And you know, standing 5 feet away from a fer de lance, which is the most venomous snake in Latin America, all that stuff. So I love, if I can, to go to the place I'm writing about with my notebook and my camera. And so I was in Costa Rica working on this mystery, and on one of the hikes, the guide who was with us, we always hiked with a guide who's a native of Costa Rica because they, you know the forest, they know the animals, they can keep you safe and also provide just tremendous stories and wealth of information. But we were with Alex, and our guide said, you know, we're going to hike to the Almendro tree today. And I said, oh, that sounds great. He said, I didn't know, you know, my daughter was younger at the time, but she loved the rainforest and, you know, wasn't afraid of the snakes. He said, I didn't take you here the other day because I wasn't sure how she would do, but she's tough as nails. We're going to go for it. So we went on a longer hike through the jungle that ended at this enormous Almendro tree. And the Almendro is called Tree of Life in Costa Rica because so many animals depend on it to survive in so many different ways. And interestingly enough, the people of Costa Rica depend on it too, because probably you know that ecotourism is huge in Costa Rica.
I'm sure.
So many bird watchers come there. And one bird in particular, the great green macaw, which is this stunning, big, beautiful green member of the parrot family, only nests and breeds in hollows in these places in the Almendro tree. And these trees were being cut down for lumber. They, you know, they're very hard. They make, you know, they're valuable in that way.
Hmm.
But the people of Costa Rica were realizing, wait a minute, these trees are more valuable to us if our animals are breeding in them, and they're bringing in people and bird watchers and tourists.
Right.
And so they started a real program to protect the Almendro tree. So we went on this hike through the woods, and he said, here's the Almendro tree. And this tree was just tall. It towered over everything else in the rainforest. It was gorgeous. And he said, if you come around here, you can go inside it. It's partly hollow.
Whoa.
And we stepped inside this tree, and, you know, water's dripping on us, and something was squeaking by my head, and I said, I hear a squeaking sound. He said, that's because bats live in the tree.
In the tree. Wow.
In the tree. And
huge.
Actually, my husband took a photograph with a flash, and in that photo, you can see the bats. You know, from my ear. But it was one of those things. Well, the book is called Tree of Wonder, and wonder is a huge part of my writing. I mean, it's just when something makes me go, whoa, that is so cool, I know I need to write about it. And so I got back, you know, we got back to the room that night, and the afternoon rain started, and I was sitting on the hammock with the rain pouring down, and I thought, there's a whole other book here about this tree. Because Alex was telling us, literally, more than 1,000 different organisms depend on it in some way.
Yep.
You know, the great green macaw nests in the branches, and the toucans eat the fruit, and the fer de lance is you know, nesting and laying its eggs around the trunk,
right.
And the poison dart frogs, those amazing green and blue and red frogs, are crawling up to put their tadpoles in water pools in the leaves. It's just this incredible ecosystem in a tree, and I was blown away by that. So that's my very long story. I was working on a totally different book, and I found this one by accident, and it needed to be written.
It feels a lot like that. Reading this book, it feels a lot like discovering things along with you. I mean, to be honest, when I approached it, I thought, oh, cool. Here's another Counting in the Rainforest type book. I love these books because we all were in third grade at one point and wanted to go to rainforest. And many of us still, of course, want to go. So mine is the Galapagos. I want to go to the Galapagos. I think about it all the time. And so I was ready to approach the story that way. And then I started having these connections that, okay, these are those towering giants that I've seen in photos. And then more than that, to know that, as you said, right from the very first page where you're talking about the Almendro tree, to say that there's 1,000 different living things depending on that tree. But then also looking at what that means depending on the tree, what that means that sometimes it's for protection or for food or for all of those different needs. Incredible to know that that one tree is giving so much life to the rest of the forest.
That was really fascinating to me. And even the animals that you can say, oh, these animals depend on it for food, but even the animals depending on it for food are depending on it for food in totally different ways.
That's,
you know,
right.
You've got the toucans eating the ripe fruit, and you've got the agoutis eating the fruit after it falls, and you've got the blue morpho butterflies drinking the nectar of the fruit after it starts to rot. And just, it was just amazing to me how through its whole life cycle this tree is just so fascinating. You know, and then you've got your leafcutter ants who
That's
are not
what I was gonna bring up.
Eating
yeah.
the leaves, but they're using the leaves to farm their own fungus.
I don't know why.
Yeah. It's so interesting.
Why I never knew that leafcutter ants, I just took for granted, or maybe many people take for granted, that you just assume that they're eating the leaves, and I know how much they can kind of clear down a tree. But not only to hear that, no, they're actually using it in order to essentially harvest or grow the food that they want to eat, but then also that they're smart enough to know not to kill a tree, that they will take a chunk of it and then let that regrow while they move to another tree. I just thought there's so much here. Every page offers so much wonder, really, to go and explore each and every animal and facet of this tree. And then you've even got, you know, Simona has animals painted in here that you don't even talk about in the book. There's even more there to look at and explore and understand. I just thought, I really walked away sort of moved by it. It was really wonderful.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. I'm probably the thing that makes me happiest is that sense of wonder comes
yeah.
through. That was what I felt the whole week we were there. I was just, you know, walking around saying, I can't believe I'm in this place where all these animals live. And, you know, aside from the animal's relationship to the tree, I really also was just intrigued by their relationship to one another. I mean, if you want to talk about interconnectivity, boy, a rainforest is the place to do it. It was pretty incredible.
It's noisy in a rainforest, isn't it? I've heard that there's just, when you are out there in the forest and you get to listen, you just are hearing different calls of all sorts of different animals, and you're also hearing the rain there, but also the sort of denseness of the trees sort of stops the sound as well, right? I've heard such weird phenomena about rainforests that make it sort of a magical place.
It is. It's the quietest noise you'll ever hear, though. I mean, when I think of noise, I think of, you know, traffic and loud talking and things like that. And, you know, the rain, like I said, we were there in August during the rainy season when I went on this research trip. And every afternoon we were there by about 3 o'clock. You know, we would go out and hike in the morning. We'd get out early and birdwatch and hike. And I'd have my notebook and my camera. And every afternoon by about 3, we planned to be back, and the skies opened up, and it poured and poured, and it just thundered. I mean, it just poured and rained, and it poured off the roof in sheets, and that was so loud, but it was this, I don't know, this amazing, quiet kind of loud. The rain in the rainforest is really just remarkable. We got home that summer, and it was raining really hard one day. At our house in northern New York, and my daughter said, "Wow, it's raining hard. It's almost like Costa Rica rain, but not quite. There was nothing quite like it." So yeah, there is. It's a strange mix of loud and quiet, and it's a place like no other.
Wow, and I love that as an author. We talked about this a little bit last time when you were on, but having the opportunity to go to these places to do research there, not just as much as we have technology at our fingertips, to not discount what it means to be a researcher, to go there and to be able to communicate through emotion by experiencing through emotion.
I find that no matter what I'm writing, and I do try if I can to get myself to the place, but no matter what I'm writing, it makes it just a huge difference. You know, whether it's this book or my the Ranger in Time series that I do with Scholastic, the first, you know, two books are about the Oregon Trail and ancient Rome. Then the third one is an Underground Railroad story. Mm. For all three of those first three books, I spent time in the places. And and the things you collect in a place are different from the things you read about. You know, I'm walking down a trail behind a tobacco plantation, and there's a feather from a hawk on the trail. You know, you would never find that reading about the plantation online, right, or anywhere else, but those are the details that I find just make writing richer. So I do always try to go if I can. And when I can't, you know, journals and diaries sometimes have those things too.
So, see, this is what makes me feel so excited about talking to authors, because I feel like it ends up getting to be so much like being a librarian in the way that you just continuously get to learn and explore your curiosities and just the world and really whatever. I mean, knowing you, Kate, you research it all. It's not like you're only writing, I don't know, historical fiction or something, but you really cover the gamut here. So I feel jealous of your kids to be able to grow up with all these diverse experiences, but just how exciting it must be to just be a lifelong learner and to be living that out.
It's the best thing about my job. It really, I mean, that and meeting readers are the two best things about my job, because what you described is exactly what it is. I mean, when I'm working on a book, that is a license to just throw myself into learning about that topic or that era in history or that place. And it's, you know, what a gift that is. I was one of these kids who was a complete research geek, and I'll confess this to you and your, you know, and a few thousand close friends were listening. But I would go to the library in the summer, and I had older brothers and sisters. I was the youngest of four, and they always seemed to be assigned these big research projects, and they would complain about them. And I'd be like, are you out of your mind? You have to learn everything about gorillas, and this is a problem. Like, I just would be so jealous of these research projects. And so I would go to the library in the summer, and I would assign myself project. I'd be like, all right, you're going to give me 3 pages about bumblebees by Friday. And then I would just get this big pile of books, and I would just gorge on, you know, on a topic. And I would write my reports. My mom would put them on the fridge, and, you know, but I loved that. And it's so funny. Even when I was in college, I went to Syracuse University, and you know, I was studying broadcast journalism then, but when I went to the library, Byrd Library was the biggest library I'd ever seen. And the first time I walked in there after my freshman year started, I just wandered, you know, I had some report on the history of journalism, and I put all my stuff down, and I just wandered up and down the shelves. And I was like, look at all this stuff about microorganisms, and look at all this stuff about earthquakes. And you know, and it's really funny, because that's what I get to do now, you know, is look at all this stuff.
Oh, man, it's incredible that you were that child, and that to see it play out that way. I know that you came from broadcast journalism. I think I know from reading your website, but also from talking to you last time. So that, all of that makes sense too, wanting to tell the story, wanting to learn more about it. But just to know that I'm a teacher, so I see that in children now, to know that this could be where your interest takes you. This could be your trajectory. You don't ever have to grow out of those passions that you had when you were young.
No, and that's a really cool thing. Like I said, being a lifelong learner, I don't know, being a teacher is a great job, and a librarian for lifelong learners, and being a writer too, I really think.
Oh, man. Well, so let me go back to the book for a second, because you do another fun thing in here that I love the visual component to the math, that is, that's in here in this book. But more importantly, I love the line that you have, this sort of stanza that repeats, that says, life multiplies again and again. And in that, page by page, as we read through this story, we do count by doubling the number every time of the different species that we're looking at, starting with this one almendro tree, but then to two macaw and four toucans and further and further until we get all the way to 1,024 leafcutter ants.
That's
and,
my favorite.
Yeah, what a big number. But I got to say, first off, I want to talk about that math and why you chose to put it in there and all of that. But then I want to make sure that we come back to the extension that you included after your author's note, after your research notes. You have this great activity extension that I just was so impressed with and I thought was so thoughtful as a math extension. So I want to come back to that. But can you talk a little bit about why sort of frame some of this writing around the math that's going on?
Sure. First of all, I have to confess to you that when I was in school, I was very good at math, and I just never understood it as well as I wish I had. You know, I never made connections the way I see my own kids doing that. I have two kids who are really great at math, who also have an appreciation for it, and find it relevant to their lives in a way that I really didn't when I was in school. So as an adult, finding that now is really a gift for me, and also seeing it in my children. And so it's something I look for. And the thing, I guess the thing that really fascinated me about this tree in the rainforest was that it was just one. And from one tree, there was all of this life, and it kind of, yeah. You know, the idea of multiplying just seemed to fit very naturally, and I, you know, knew that would add another element to the story. And obviously a book like this is, you know, hopefully going to be something that curious families pick up, but probably the biggest place it's going to find its home is in libraries, in classrooms, where people are passionate about nature and learning and ecosystems and things like that. And so I thought that would be one more one more kind of magic to add to a book that a story that I already felt had an awful lot of magic. And so I started playing around with different ways to do that. And I thought, well, you know, there are lots of counting books out there, but one of the coolest things about numbers is how big they get all of a sudden when you start to double them. I mean, you start with one and you go one, you double that and you got two, and then you're four, and then you're eight. And it feels like it's going to go on for a very long time in those slow increments. But all of a sudden, you're 16, 32, 64, 128. And all of a sudden, you're dealing with these big numbers. And as a parent who had kids who, even as toddlers, like really loved big numbers, I thought that would be really fun for kids to play with and see how fast things add up, which is kind of a metaphor for the rainforest, too. It really things multiply pretty quickly.
Yeah, it reminded me of there's a Demi book called, is it One Grain of Rice? Or there's something like that where there's this folktale of multiplying that way and how quickly it adds up. And I thought that same thing, but to ground it in nonfiction, in something real, in something that we can see, or something that you, in fact, visited, and to know that there are thousands of ants that are working hard to harvest this food, while at the same time there's this great group of monkeys that are here, or there's all I don't know, everything around one tree, that one tree could sustain so much biodiversity was incredible. And then, as I said, you've got this extension in the end where you talk about the tree, but then this rainforest map that you have, actually, some of that actually calls into saying, okay, well, let's figure out how many species or how many different animals we saw represented just in this book, and then imagine that for 10 trees, how many animals would we have, and for 100 trees, knowing that this is a forest. There isn't, of course, just one tree. And it just, right away, I guess the feeling it, and I like this, but it made me feel small. Right away, it made me feel small, and I loved
it's a good
that.
Way to feel small, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes you feel small in the way the stars do. I
exactly.
Think.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I have raised two kids who love playing with math, and I thought since we were looking at those ideas, it would be fun to put just a little something extra in the back of the book for those kids who really just wanted to mess around with those numbers some more. And so that's why that was there. I had a great time with it too. It's funny. I did, you know, I designed the problems and sent the book to my editor, and she wrote back and she said, we need to both do all these problems and make sure we come up with the same answer. So we did that, made sure everything was good. We're like, okay, check this one, check that one. So, yeah, so the answers are there too, but yeah, it was really fun. I mean, it's, you know, so much of my writing is me messing around. I have to confess to you, you know, it's like, oh, I think this is really cool and I want to learn about it. Let's mess around with some math numbers. And so I figure if I'm having that much fun with it, I really hope kids will too.
I love, I'm writing down that quote. So much of my writing is me messing around.
Oh, don't say that. That doesn't sound sophisticated at all. Make it sound better.
No, it sounds creative. It sounds like exploring. It sounds exciting. It sounds to me.
It is exploring.
I know how many books you have out, Kate. I should say it this way. I know how many books you have published. So I know you've written even more than that. And to know that you are playing and keeping things feeling this fresh and this new all this while is such a wonderful quality that you have that we can see communicated through the stories you share. That's a really great thing you have going on.
Thank you. I've been really, really fortunate to work with publishers who are just incredible as far as, you know, letting me follow my passions, and I'm super thankful for that.
Yeah, no doubt. You make beautiful books, and these publishers are, you know, pairing you with some amazing illustrators to bring the art to life as well.
Right? Isn't Simona's art in this book phenomenal? I was blown away when I saw the first drawing that they sent, the first color piece that my editor sent and said, you know, here's what Simona's working on. It took my breath away, the bright colors. And, you know, it's not easy. The rainforest is a pretty amazing place, and it's not easy to capture that. And I have to confess, when I was working on this book, I was so worried I was going to be disappointed when I saw the art, because how do you capture that magic? How do you capture that richness and that wetness and all of it? And she did. I just thought that was amazing.
I liked that she gave us so many different perspectives on the tree. It felt the way that it looks is almost like an observer that has, I don't know, some sort of like a camera drone that we can just fly right up to the level of the animals, but then pull back. So sometimes we're seeing the branches just shooting out, and sometimes we're seeing the very tips, the outer tips of the branches or the trunk. We're just seeing everything all around the tree, which just feels like we are exploring this one object. And I think Simona really, she really did an effective job on it. It worked out really, really well.
Wasn't that amazing? I love that. It's like she had a little GoPro on the frog.
There it is.
Something.
A GoPro. That's exactly what I was trying to find in my brain.
Itty bitty GoPro strapped to the leaf cutter ant's back.
And you know, she also pulls off, when you're talking about animals, you sort of have this, you could go for a really realistic look, but then you run the risk of it not looking accurate. Or you could go kind of more cartoony, but then you're losing some of the nonfiction, the research kind of feel about it. But she did a beautiful job making these illustrations something that children could study along with your words, that they could really investigate that art there. And that really, I think, pays off well for the story too.
I agree. That's my favorite thing about picture books is that, you know, as much as I want to tell as much of the story as I can as the author, I'm only part of the story, you know, and the rest of the story comes from the illustrator. And as you said, those tiny details that aren't in the words that an illustrator brings to the story, it's just such a richer whole because of it.
Yeah. You know, I was hearing you mention earlier about in the beginning when they were looking for who to illustrate. And I know that not often do authors get the chance to always give feedback on, well, this is the kind of art that I was picturing or whatever. Or maybe on rare occasions they might actually come to you and say, we're considering whatever, these three or four different people. But the path that led you to Simona was definitely the right path. It definitely paid off, I think, really well.
I think so, too. I don't remember. It was a while ago now, so I don't remember the exact details. Chronicle is pretty amazing. I mean, quite often they will send me you know, a few names with links to online portfolios and say, hey, these are three or four people we're looking at. Do you have any thoughts you want to share? And,
cool.
You know, it's not up to the author to decide the illustrator. That's not my decision. That's the decision of, you know, the team, the art team at Chronicle, which is trained to do that in a way that I'm not. But they do ask, and I love that. And I remember seeing Simona's art samples, and in particular some of her other books. You know, there was one, she had a you know, this picture of a jaguar, and I was like, oh, I hope she gets to do it. and so that was pretty exciting when she took on the project.
Oh, that's great. Hey, so what else do you have going on? I know you've got a couple more Ranger books coming out, right?
I do, and actually, it's more than a couple more now, because Scholastic pretty recently signed up books 5 and 6 in the series.
They extended. Congratulations!
Yeah, thank you. Yay! I'm super excited. Like I said, this series has been just so interesting to work on. Everyone is a new adventure for me as well as for Ranger. So book three is called Ranger in Time, Long Road to Freedom.
Yeah, the Underground Railroad, you said.
Yep,
yeah.
A fugitive slave story that I'm really excited about. That comes out at the end of December.
Oh, not long, and, hey.
Yeah, no, they're every 6 months.
Oh, that's right. You said every 6 months. So we might even see... I know we saw the other ones on the book fair, right? We might even be able to catch this third book on our book fair then.
Possibly. Yeah, and, for sure in the spring, I would think.
Right on. Yep. At least, if nothing else, in those catalogs. That's great.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then five is going to be set in Iceland. It's a Viking girl. And so I'm pretty excited about that. I am headed to Iceland this summer to research that book.
Oh, cool. Are you going to sleep in the ice hotel?
In Iceland?
Right?
I don't think they have that in the summer.
Oh, well, not in the summer.
I don't know. I've never heard of that in Iceland. I know they have one in Quebec City in the winter.
Do they also there? I had friends that went to Iceland, so I'm aware of a couple of the things that they visited. I don't know about the summer or whatever.
I'm all about the Vikings, so.
Yeah?
So that's book five, and book six, I'm pretty sure, is going to be a California earthquake story. So,
all right.
Yeah, so I'm busy with working on the Ranger books. I am working on a new novel that I'm excited about, and, you know, have a couple other picture books in the pipeline, too.
Look at you always spinning plates on everything. I love that.
It keeps me busy.
I know.
It's always, you know, just yesterday I was working on the novel, and I got to a good place to stop, but I still had some time, and I was like, oh, I'm going to do just a little bit of work on this picture book, and I get a whole new, you know, new wind when I do that. So you get the second wind for another project. So that works out well for me.
Well, good. Yay. As always, I'm happy to know that you're still writing and still working on other stuff, but it's just great that you've got... It's great that you sort of play the bases in that way, that there's always something coming out for a different audience. That's really fun to have that, especially as a librarian. That means I'm always filling different sections of my library with your work, which is fun to know
different readers
are catching it. I love it. Anyway, it's always fun to talk to you, Kate. Hey, I'm going to ask you, just for fun, I'm going to ask you this kickball question again. One, because I have no idea what you said the first time. I can't remember. I didn't go back and listen to the archives. But two, just because it's fun to know when people's interests change or just whatever's informing you now. So I hope you don't mind if I ask again.
That's all right.
So here it is. I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament. And Kate, I'd love to know what one person alive or past, what one more person from the Kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
Well, I think when you interviewed me before, I told you Linda Urban.
Because you did tell me, that's
she's
right.
She's a great friend, and I'm terrible at kickball, and I would want her to talk to in the outfield. But I have another answer for you, and I'm actually going to cheat and choose two people because they have so many of the same passions that I do. Lori Griffin Burns and Sarah Albee, who both write amazing high-interest nonfiction, and they are both incredible friends and interesting people. And they are both the kind of people who, when maybe I wasn't, you know, performing that well, kicking the ball or getting people out, would be willing to lift up third base with me and look for bugs underneath it. So Lori and Sarah are definitely going to be an asset in the outfield.
Oh, what a perfect mental image. Can you imagine if this ever... We need to get some of our film friends in on this and actually get all of you together at some... SCBWI conference or something, and just have, because what I need is
NCTE.
What I need is the video of trying to have a kickball game, but you looking under the plate. And some of my other, I've heard other people talking about how, oh, I would just sit on the bench with Mo Willems, and we would just probably draw pictures of people and make fun of them or something.
Right, they'd be drawing pictures of us looking under third base. Yep, that's pretty perfect.
That's
wonderful.
Think
my parents have a picture of that from my my powder puff softball days when I was 7 and 8. Probably that's already been immortalized somewhere.
Oh gosh, I love it. Well, hey, congratulations on the release of another great picture book. I'm excited for my readers when I get back to school to get to check out Tree of Wonder. And congratulations also for more Ranger books to come and everything else you're working on.
Thank you so much, and thanks for the opportunity to chat today. It's always fun to talk about where a story came from and remember that research.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by Matthew Winger in his library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. Theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers the books reference. listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtimes a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.